So good morning. My name is Yusuf Khalidi. I work on the Windows Azure team, which is, as you probably know, Microsoft's cloud platform. With a few others, we started this project, what, 3, 4 years ago by now. We are on our third major iteration. So as you see at the very end, I'll give you more of the history, but we started back way in 2006. We had the first iteration available public in 2008. We turned the crank on this thing twice since then, and as you will see, we have a very strong platform at the moment. But today's presentation is beyond just Windows Azure. What I will be doing is give you an overview of how we view at Microsoft Cloud Computing, our own definition, if you will, and show distinctly what we mean by that, and in a nutshell, the role of applications and application models in cloud computing. I will use Windows Azure as a concrete example to which we are aiming all our efforts. And then I'll go and give you a sober assessment where we are in the field, we as an industry, both the opportunities of cloud computing and some of the challenges. And again, many of them revolve around making sure the application meets the cloud halfway. Because in a nutshell, guys, the cloud is not just another virtualization play. It's actually a new way to do applications and new way to do infrastructure for computing, basically. So here's a quick overview. Tell you more about cloud computing, Windows Azure, then go through some of the issues that we all have to tackle to make this thing a successful effort. I'll leave plenty of time for questions. It's a big room, so we probably should put the questions toward the end, but we should have plenty of time for Q&A as well. Good. You may have seen some of the value proposition discussion about cloud computing. Really, ultimately, it ends up to three simple points on the slide. One has to do with agility. As you may know from personal experience, you don't have to go and do the usual stuff to put a service on the cloud, on the web, if you will, if you have a cloud computing platform. You do not have to go buy machines, install the OS, and patch it, and find floor space and power and heating and the whole gamut of stuff you do to actually do a service on the cloud. Instead, it's all about agility of you pay attention to your service, to your application, and the resource stuff is taken care of for you. Different platforms help you in different ways, how much it takes care of the platform details for you. In Windows Azure case, we do quite a bit. Others give you a bunch of VMs, for example. But ultimately, it's about agility. You can get to market quickly, you can expand capacity quickly, and importantly, you can take away capacity quickly because, frankly, capacity planning is a hard thing for all of us. Another one is more of an accounting play, if you will. It really shifts the cost from being a capital expense play to an operation expense play. It actually goes hand in hand with the first one. No, you don't have to lay out, out a bunch of money at the beginning for lots of machines and capital expenses and so forth. Instead, you pay as you go. The variation in this theme, as far as how you bill for it and how you maybe do commitment pricing and discounts, what have you, but ultimately, it's about paying only for what you use. Thirdly, beyond the agility talk and beyond the cost reduction talk, there are new scenarios that we see are being enabled by the cloud, mainly because we're talking about the cloud being this thing available everywhere. And you have new scenarios, new applications that can act as a communication hub in the cloud, collaboration scenarios, federation scenarios, things which otherwise would be very hard to do if you had to do it only on premises. Ultimately, though, high-scale sharing is key. Everything I told you really doesn't make sense unless you have a very high-scale infrastructure to share and to use among many, many, many customers and services. Otherwise, no one provider or even a collection of providers can give you all these attributes of elasticity, et cetera, unless you have economies of scale. Economies of scale of large systems where you can actually elastically take capacity from and into the pool, if you will. And ultimately, collectively, we have to increase the utilization of the systems. Otherwise, the cost will become high. So always look at the size of the ultimate, if you will, clouds you're dealing with. They have to be big enough to give you those value props, which in a sense, by the way, guys, argues against sort of private clouds. But you'll see me toward the end of the discussion discuss how the whole spectrum is still needed nonetheless. This is key to us, this slide, by the way, guys. Let me quite honest with you, be honest with you. The word cloud is very much in fashion. Every company, everybody's doing cloud this, cloud that. Some new stuff, some old repurposed technology being now relabeled cloud. To us, the cloud means something very, very specific. For us, cloud computing really revolves around three dimensions, which are on the slide. First and foremost, it's about an application model. It's about a scale-out application model where state is effectively in the network. In this system, the application has to be able to deal with state being not in any given machine. No single machine is, perfect. Any state on any given machine in this environment, in any given application state, if you will, has to be viewed as a cache. So the application has to store its state somewhere else, in a reliable store somewhere, in a database, for example, or we have one of each, or the application has to do its own replication of its own data. Typically, they store it somewhere else, of course. Now, we can store stuff locally, no problem, as long as it's a cache. And why am I saying this thing? Look at the second point. We're talking about a scale-out hardware architecture here, shared nothing hardware architecture. You have many, many, many machines throughout your cloud system. And those machines are not babysat by an administrator just waiting to see what's going on with it. Any one of them can fail, and they do fail. Therefore, any instance of an application running on that application may have to be restarted, maybe locally, maybe remotely. And therefore, the state has to be able to, your application has to be able to get back its state from somewhere, from storage, reconstitute it, whatever the case may be. So the first two go hand in hand. You have a scale-out shared nothing hardware architecture, which implies an application model that makes sure the application itself can handle where its state comes from. It also has other implications, by the way. You want to have a more loosely coupled system, use queuing quite a bit and so forth, because when you have a failure, you cannot assume that I'm talking to somebody else and somebody else is always there. It may be there again a few seconds, few minutes later, so queue things and so forth. So I'll touch more on this thing, but having the right application model is really, really key. Otherwise, all the value prop I tell you and everybody else in the industry tells you, it's going to be very hard to attain, really. Lastly, along with all of this thing comes a new operational model. And in a way, if you want a one-liner here, you spend more time thinking and dealing with your application and much, much less time dealing with the infrastructure stuff. The plumbing is taken care of by the infrastructure. We're the plumbers, if you will. So things like, you know, all the way from the physical stuff to physical security, getting machines and booting the OS and patching the OS and what have you, is taken care of by the platform. That means there's a shift in the operational model from managing everything all the way up to the application to only paying attention to the application and to the life cycle of the application. For developers, that makes lots of sense. For application management, it makes lots of sense. For some others, they fear they're losing the control of it, to be honest. And I'll go back to this point a bit later on as well. So in summary, having the right application model is key to get the value prop of cloud computing going forward. I'll give you one slide that I do not like. However, it is important to make sure these terms are on the table because nowadays everybody in the industry are using these terms. You probably heard them all. Platform as a service, where you effectively look at the system mostly from a point of view, how do I build my application? What APIs does the platform give me to write my application, to run my application, to manage my application? In this system, you typically do not worry about the OS and OS patching and network configuration and config settings for your firewall, what have you. Instead, your focus is squarely at your service, your application. At the other end of the spectrum, the industry coined the term infrastructure as a service, where most of the emphasis is about how you host your application. I'm using the terms loosely, guys, but in a nutshell, infrastructure as a service gives you a bunch of virtual machines on a sea of hardware somewhere, and that leaves the rest up to you. You have to manage the OS images. You have to bake the config settings on your VMs. You worry about network topology, your firewall settings, the whole gamut. Very powerful, very primitive. And then at the other end of the spectrum, you have the software as a service, where we're talking about finished services here. You are consuming a service. You're getting exchange online. You're asking for a bunch of mailboxes. I'm using it as a service, giving a bunch of mailboxes. I'm not talking about writing applications, nor about managing infrastructure and so forth. These sort of points in the spectrum that the industry has come to use now are points on a spectrum. That's why partly I don't really like this thing. It's not like a category or a taxonomy, if you will. And just to give you an idea where these some products fit on that spectrum, and please, it's not a scientific slide per se, but you see approximately where some of those technologies fit on that spectrum. The clearer ones have to do with SaaS, to be honest. Something like Exchange Online or Salesforce.com, kind of clear. You know, you are talking about a service. You may do some configuration, but you're using the service. It becomes a bit more fuzzy as you move toward the middle, if you will. We in Windows Azure, we very much view ourselves as a platform as a service play, but with a wider spectrum. And that's why you see an overlap with the bottom part of the scale. And you see others out there where you can get all the Lego blocks, but it's up to you to put the kit together. There are other technologies in the market, guys. I don't want to slide track space somebody else, but that will give you a good idea what we're talking about here and where we view Windows Azure and our investment from Microsoft on that spectrum. So let's go down a couple of levels now in details. This slide shows you the core platform we have in Microsoft, which is the Azure platform as a whole. Core part of the Azure platform is a Windows Azure piece. And the easiest way to think of Windows Azure, it is the operating system for the cloud. It gives you the basic tenets, the basic aspects of an operating system, but for cloud computing. It gives you virtualized computing, gives you resource management, gives you storage, gives you automation, gives you network virtualization. I'll go through this thing in a bit more details right now. So for computation, everything is virtualized. We take care of the details. We run hypervisors. We slice and dice the machines. You typically don't see those details. For storage, I'll tell you more in a few slides. We have a very large-scale storage infrastructure, large blobs, tables, what have you, that enables you to put your state. Remember I told you to put your state somewhere, which is highly reliable and so forth? You can put it there. Automation management is core part of Windows Azure. It's actually one of the distinctions of our platform in that you, by and large, look at your application lifecycle management as a core interface to that platform versus any other dimension. And last is an increasing investment in networking, both in, within the infrastructure and as a global network as well. And I'll touch more on this in a second. A very important part of that platform is the SQL Azure piece as well. So we give you low-level storage, as in Windows Azure storage for blobs and basic tables, and we give you full, rich SQL as a service. And the difference between SQL Azure and SQL in the one line is that unlike traditional databases, you do not have to go hire a DBA or install SQL or patch it or worry about block shipping or backup and the like. It's a service. You declare you want a table, you want a database, and you start using it. And the service's job to take care of all the details behind you. There's a number of other technologies I will spend some time on later have to do with connecting on-premises to the cloud and vice versa. And I'm using the word connecting here broadly, but it's a whole theme I'll go into in a second where you'll find out that to move stuff to the cloud, you will probably leave some stuff on-premises anyway, and you have to talk back and forth between them. Last important point from the slide, the platform is language agnostic. It's an operating system. We run anything on the base platform. You want to use Visual Studio on .NET, please do so. You want to use Eclipse and Java and PHP, please do so. We have customers that have different stacks running in the base system. Of course, we have a very good investment in Visual Studio on .NET, but we also have an increasing investment in Java and Eclipse for the same platform. We recognize that you have existing code. We know you have stuff around, and you want to move it to the cloud, or we'll help you do so without, you know, worrying if it's managed code and managed code, C++, whatever the case may be. So let me sort of click down a bit on Windows Azure Box. This is a very old slide. We actually came up with this slide back in 2006. These are the basic architecture elements in which we designed this system. I can spend an hour just on this slide. I will not do so. But the reason I'm showing you the slide is to impress on you those tenets I told you about cloud computing, the application model, scale out, shared nothing infrastructure, and so forth, they're attained by these architecture elements. Key among these is that we effectively understand the topology of the service. We ask you as a developer, as an author, as an assembler of an application, to give us the topology of the service. How many executables are there, who talks to whom, and so forth. Based on this topology, we do the basic automation for the platform. So this model-driven aspect of the platform is important. We don't really care what the inner loop looks like. I don't care if the code is written in C++, C, or with C sharp. But I do care about the communication pattern of the service. Why? That's how I can take that topology, that graph, if you will, and then give you the hardware resources to actually back it up. And the way we do it is in the infrastructure, and when we ultimately get the payload from the user through multiple means, an APIs and a portal, whatever the case may be, we crack open the model, which is a big fancy XML file. And we take that description you want, the topology. You want so many of those and so forth and talking to each other, and we go map them to existing hardware. This business of opening up the topology, mapping it to the hardware, configuring the hardware, including the network for you, is all done automatically. We don't have a bunch of Microsoft employees just waiting to type in some stuff. It just happens every night, every minute, basically. Then after we do the allocation function, the reason our software exists from that point on is that to attain the state you described. If you say you want 10 front ends laid out in certain topology, we try our utmost to attain that state in the face of failures, in the face of your application exiting, the hardware going up in flames, whatever the case may be. Ultimately, of course, if we give up, we give you an event and so forth. But the reason after the allocation happens is to attain the state. And you, at any point of time, through APIs and otherwise, you can change the state, the desired state, and we react accordingly. This, by the way, is a core differentiator for us. You find others speak of cloud computing, they give you a bunch of VMs. Here, I give you an automation layer over a bunch of VMs. Another core part of the platform. See, an OS is not worth its salt if it doesn't give you a file system. And our cloud platform gives you a very strong story, both at the low level of this slide and then at the SQL Azure level, which I mentioned earlier. So the Windows Azure Storage is an adaptive system that replicates storage behind the cover. It does lots of caching within its infrastructure and load balancing. If you hit a partition and it becomes a hard partition, we do also splitting in the back. We join them, stuff you don't see, but it's very large scale. This, by the way, was the first application written for Windows Azure, when it was called Red Dog. This is our dog food, if you will. It's written in the same service model I told you before, all the automation, all the stuff. It's actually a service itself, an application itself. In return, we depend on it to boot the system up. So we are dog fooding ourselves from our system from day one. In Windows Storage, when Windows Azure Storage, we have blobs. These are very, very large files, along with some metadata. And we have now facility to do snapshot, update in place, a bunch of other things as well. This can be quite big. You want to store big movies in there, go for it, etc. We also have tables, which enables you to build effectively structured storage, typically pointers into blobs. It's a very simple model, and again, it's focused on very massive scale. Those numbers I have on the slide, terabytes, 10 terabytes, and so forth, they're easy. Because if you want many, many terabytes, we can do it. You want petabytes, give us a call. Not an issue for us. We're talking very big scale here. In addition to the basic primitives of blobs and tables, we have queues. As I mentioned, a good way to structure services for the cloud is by communicating through queues. Because you can hide lots of latency issues this way. You can hide failures or tolerate failures that way. Finally, you can mount blobs as drives. So if you have existing code assuming NTFS local file system, a blob can show up as an NTFS volume. Read and write to it are durable. And those writes, by the way, are replicated multiple times within the data center. And we have now geographical distribution as well, replication. So the data written in the data center actually goes to different data center as well. So it's all very, very highly reliable. The way you access storage is we have native APIs, we have .NET APIs, there's a Java library if you want to. And as I mentioned, you can access it through local drives as well. But do note, to truly attain the value of the platform and of storage, you need to look at how you partition your data and how your tables look like and so forth. So there's work in the application to actually really make use of all this stuff. But the infrastructure is really there. Now, a bit to some development tools and the like. We have an SDK, which if you've been following the platform, we rev quite frequently along with the rest of the platform. The SDK gives you the full ability to package your application. It includes an emulator, the dev fabric, if you will, that you can use to write application on your local machine. So any useful, any sizable, if you will, laptop or any PC will do. Where you can actually get all the APIs of the platform, including all the semantics of, you know, recovery and the fabric control stuff and so forth, emulated on your local machine. Along with the SDK, you have a plugin for Visual Studio. So you can bring up a Visual Studio, choose a cloud project, click on a few things. Ultimately, you can actually you can debug and test locally. And ultimately, you can say, send to the web, and it will go to actually run it in the web as well. And with Visual Studio 10, you can actually do entity trace into the cloud. So you can debug into your application forward or backward in time. We also have plugins for Eclipse, for PHP and Java. And we continue to invest in this space, so stay tuned, guys. There's also a portal in which you interact with the system. It has basically three functions. You can create accounts there, get your billing information, and then do all the operational aspects of managing your service. Guys, I'm showing you all the current screenshots. We are improving all this space quite a bit, and please stay tuned as well. Now, that portal is actually written against a bunch of RESTful APIs that are available to you as well. So if you don't like the portal, or you want a script, or you have in-house tools, whatever the case may be, those APIs are all available. They are RESTful APIs. We have .NET mappings to them. We have other mappings to them. We have PowerShell, PowerShell command list. If I had more time, I'll show you how to script this thing. And we also now have a MOM, basically, add-in. You can actually monitor applications in Windows Azure from System Center as well. We're investing more in this space. Also, we have diagnostics APIs with multiple data sources for diagnostics and logging. This was an area which initially we really had to improve, and we've been making quite a bit of strides in as well. So take a look at these APIs, guys. If the portal is not powerful enough for you, anything other than account creation and billing is available through the APIs. Today, Windows Azure is a public cloud. We have a large and growing global presence. Today, we are in 6 data centers in 3 geographical locations, North America and Western Europe and Asia-Pacific region. You get to choose when you create account or accounts where your compute applications, where your storage is located, and you can mix and match. There's also a global CDN network, a content distribution network, that's available to you, and it's integrated with the system as well, billing, technology, APIs, what have you, such that if you have an application that needs to have its data basically cached and served from multiple locations among the globe, you can use it as well. Please note, everything I'm telling you on our platform, including the CDN, is a la carte. So if you don't like, for example, our CDN, you can use Akamai's, please don't. If you don't like our storage system, you can write in S3, etc. You can do this stuff. Having said that, we want to give you the whole spectrum here. Also note that our CDN by name is actually used extensively by other properties from Microsoft. So it's used by Bing, it's used by Hotmail, a bunch of others as well. So it's a big part of our big infrastructure we have at Microsoft. This is the current picture. It's actually expanding. Won't bore you with this, but since last PDC, 09, we also have an SLA for the platform. It's competitive with the industry, and the fine print is written by lawyers, so the fine print is longer than this. But you can see that the model basically is for also slices in the platform. We have an SLA that we measure and we report on as well. And there's a set of penalties if you don't meet them and so forth. So far, we met them all. An old eye chart. It's an old one, by the way, I guess. We have more names here. If you're interested, we have quite a bit of number of case studies now on the public webpage of customers, adoption, and so forth. Key point to note here is that in addition to end customers, of course, we have a growing community of partners, service providers, and integrators who are collectively, along with you guys, helping make the platform more successful, which is a core part of what we do, guys. You know, we do lots of the plumbing and technology, but we need our partners to help the whole thing be very successful. I'm going quickly because I want to go to the second part of the presentation now. Core part of our strategy is recognizing that there's a spectrum that extends from on-premises all the way to the public cloud. Everything I told you so far described the Windows Azure architecture, what we have in the market today, and the public cloud today. We've also announced that we will have available a Windows Azure appliance, whereby the same software stack, same source tree actually, will be shipped as part of hardware appliance. So customers can build their own clouds as well. They can do it because they are big customers, they want it on-premises. It can be done by service providers to have their own public clouds, whatever the case may be. What we will aim for technically, for it to be the same software stack. So an application can be deployed here or there based on other reasons, other technology, based on business reasons, based on regulation, compliance, national boundaries, or this provider is cheaper than this one, etc. So we haven't announced the details of delivery dates yet, but we will deliver Windows Azure as an appliance for a number of partners. We've also announced that HP, Dell, and Fujitsu are our initial partners, and eBay is a customer also as initial partner using the appliance. So the ultimate plan is that give you the complete option from running your code on-premises, on existing hardware and software. You want to run it to Windows Server and customize it with a SAN and a bunch of things in the back end, go for it. You want to build your own private cloud using Windows Azure technology, you'll have that option. Or if you want to go to a public cloud by Microsoft or others, you also have that option. We're going to connect them all with the existing tools of technology, the languages and tools as well, like .NET and so forth. Now, so I'm going to segue now to, I told you about the spectrum, that we have a public cloud now. We will fill the spectrum. We can also build private clouds in Windows Azure. I want to motivate why the spectrum exists and will continue to be there for a while, and how to actually write applications that connect back and forth between on-premises and the cloud. So these are some challenges we will face collectively. We are all facing in industry collectively with using cloud computing. One is has to do with targeting applications to the cloud. And please note, when I say application, I'm referring to services, you know, multi-tier applications that in real life are more sophisticated than just a simple website. They're usually a front-end, a back-end, a mid-tier, and dependency on data and so forth. And for those applications, a forklift approach where you carry the whole thing, you just drop it in some cloud provider, typically does not work. I'll tell you why in a second. Another big challenge is around the orbit of security, trust, regulations, compliance, and I'm mixing things together, privacy here. And this is particularly true in shared environments. And remember early on in this presentation, I told you about the value prop of the cloud. A key aspect of the cloud computing to get you all the value prop stuff is lots of sharing, to get you elasticity, economies of scale. But that means typically is that I may have a Coke and a Pepsi running their services in the same infrastructure. So we have to worry about isolation. And am I running with my competitor in the same infrastructure who can seize my data and so forth? So security is another broad area we really have to pay attention to, which typically leads to the need of things like hybrid clouds, where you are mixing stuff you have on-premises and the cloud. You're mixing stuff that may run on sort of a private or more controlled cloud and the public cloud. This is necessary but due to its own issues of crossing boundaries that, frankly, before did not exist. You're crossing firewalls now and security domains or what have you. So I'm going to spend more time on those 3 points now. A few words about targeting apps to the cloud. I mean, I want you to, again, to repeat myself a bit. It's really important to understand that apps eventually have to meet the cloud halfway and use the cloud model. In some cases, it's really easy. I mean, we have customers who are able to take their multi-tier application services because they were already written in a scale-out service-oriented architecture. It was very nice to follow all .NET rules. You have front ends, tier, and some data. Delift the whole thing, run them in the cloud. We have a customer who have done this thing where they kept the same website running internally and our platform, and depending on load, they send more traffic our way. And they sync the data every so often. That works. A bunch of cases it works. In other cases, though, it doesn't actually work. In other cases, you have to look at your service, your multi-tier application, and figure out how to slice and dice it. Which parts must stay on-premises because, for example, the data is subject to some compliance rules or subject to national boundary rules. The data must stay within the national boundary of certain country X if it contains the following kind of information. Yet, maybe you can move the mid-tier out and the front-tier out and connect them somehow, sync part of the data back and forth. So those hybrid solutions, we see a lot of them happening, especially more enterprise scenarios. Where the idea of moving everything into the cloud tomorrow is just simply not feasible. But there's a lot of low-hanging fruit where you can move bits and pieces. Some of the questions to consider, I have the next slide with more details in them. These are some of the questions to consider when you are faced with the task of move this application to the cloud. In many cases, even writing the application to the cloud, or more likely, a combination of both. Discuss the data question and the config setting questions. It's an overriding question usually you should start from. Where is my data? How is it partitioned? Where should it live? What happens when failures happens? And how is it replicated and so forth? This is true for application data itself and for config settings of the service of the application. Scaling, remember, with all these cloud systems, including ours, there's a limit to how much you can scale a given node, a given role instance, a given VM size, because it's ultimately based on the principle that you have many, many similar machines, basically. So your code has to be able to scale out by having multiple copies versus always asking for more and more in the same machine. Dependencies is a key point. Few really big applications out there have no dependencies on anything else around them. You want to talk to an ED somewhere. You may have a dependency on the service, which is have to be physically close to you because of latency issues, etc. Speaking of latency, laws of physics are laws of physics. So I'll give you some solution about how you connect things, but if you're talking across the continent, across the globe, think of caching. Think of talking less, that kind of stuff. And then the whole issue of connectivity needs. How can I connect to my other piece of code running behind a firewall? How can I go to other places securely under my control, under my policies? And that's usually driven by a large part because of data sensitivity, because of regulations or compliance. Or, again, of course, of physics. Some data has to be accessed quite a bit by my on-premises ERP system. I can't just copy the whole thing globally. So these are some of the considerations we need all to pay attention to. We have some white papers on this subject. We actually owe you guys more on this thing, because each one of those you can spend more time on seeing how the patterns look like and some of the issues that come up for each one of these. So let's talk a bit more about security here. Key is identity management, to be honest, and access management. You'll find out that the scenarios where you want to federate at least from your on-premises infrastructure like AD to your application running in the cloud, at least for a simple thing like a single sign-on scenario. Nobody wants to access their application in the cloud only to have to enter a new set of identity and so forth. You want to use existing ones. And with new scenarios where you are doing services in the cloud and doing federation, maybe supply chain or collaboration, you may want to federate different identity systems from this customer to that customer. So identity in general, from extending it from on-premises to the cloud and from federating from different places is important. All operational processes you have in-house for deploying an application, for application life management and the like, still apply to the cloud, guys. So the point of the slide really, all these points that we sort of knew about for typical deployment and management applications still apply to the cloud, but they have to cross now the boundaries. Communication endpoint integrity, you no longer have a firewall, or one firewall. You cannot say, oh, my application lives within my firewall, I'm fine, or whatever, anything else. Especially if it becomes more of a hybrid application, where you are now slicing in a point in your service topology that now crosses the firewalls. So you may have to secure some communication before you did not think that you needed to do that. And as always, there's always compliance and risk management. Some of this stuff is new because of the cloud. To be honest, much of it is people are just like, want to see their physical machine. This is my server. And with the cloud, you're talking about this virtual thing. So it's a bunch of education we all have to do and go through ourselves. This is not a technical slide. Okay, and this is a hard area for all of us. There are laws out there, guys, that dictate certain things that we technically have to make sure we're conscious of. In other cases, we have to work with agencies and so forth to make sure that we all can make this stuff work in the cloud. But there are questions like, you'll be asked by your customer or by your department, whatever the case may be, where is the actual data? Really, where is it? You know, in traditional computing, it's in this data center, in this rack, number 5, I replicated there, and that's it. Cloud computing, you have to ask lots of questions. Where is replication happening and not happening? The not part is important, by the way. And the whole theme of you're going to be crossing now boundaries, think carefully. Stuff that used to be under your control may have to span these boundaries. Where is it going? And the policy control ultimately have to be under your control. You know, there's a give and take between you and a public cloud provider, but ultimately you should decide, for example, identity issues and who controls the network connectivity and the like. It's your policy. You have to decide who can talk to whom and so forth. So ultimately, we view the industry going to a model similar to this thing. You have public clouds. You have stuff in-house, both internal IT, which will thrive, guys, going forward. Lots of applications are not very suited for a cloud model. You may have private clouds, too, and you may have some variations on the theme in hybrids, whatever the case may be. And the reason we say this thing is actually a spectrum of trade-offs here. On one side of the slide, the public slide side, which is your left hand on top, is what typically Windows Azure is today, what is, for example, Amazon AWS today. It's a public cloud available for anybody with a credit card. And the policy control you have over it is actually limited. We tell you this is your menu of options. Live with it, please. Same with Amazon, to be honest. The other extreme, purely a private cloud, which is on your right-hand side of the slide, you can have ultimate control. You can decide it physically lives in this building, in this country, and et cetera. And only this department can go there, and only he and she and nobody else. But, you know, that sort of goes against all this elasticity stuff I told you before. And there are points in that spectrum in between. Our thesis, our strategy is to cater for the whole spectrum, guys. We are not going to tell you, you must move everything to public cloud today. That doesn't work. At the same time, please move to our cloud model. It's goodness. Scale out and share nothing stuff is good stuff. And then you can decide later, based on business needs, on deployment time, etc., where is the best place to deploy your services and applications. And to make all this thing happen, you have to be able to federate and talk across these boundaries. And that's why you see us investing more in this thing. And again, stay tuned. We're going to say more announcement of this stuff in the future. Of connecting between, if you will, the cloud and enterprises, or cloud to cloud, or cloud to on-premises. And it happens on multiple levels. From the network level, you may have seen us demo last year something called Project Sydney, for example, which is like a VPN, IPsec technology, that allows you to take assets from on-premises and join them to part of the cloud. This is a low-level, full connectivity. You know about federation. I discussed some of them already. We have access control, for example. We have our OSH technology in that space. You may want to do application connectivity at application level, like in service bus. And you also need to do things like synchronizing data between different copies of your data stores. All these will be tools available to you. And as you know, we have some technology in this space. We're going to have more in this space. These are tools available to you to enable you to cross all these boundaries. So prediction slide, and again, this is your truly predicting stuff. That doesn't mean it's going to happen. And I'm almost done. I will leave 10 minutes for Q&A. We really believe we hope and believe and we work on to make it the case that the cloud application model will be a default. Will be a default whether you deploy it in our public cloud or somebody else's or you build your own. And the reason is we do believe there's the combination of hardware architecture and best software practice is leading us to a point where the scale-out model, the service-oriented model, where data is partitioned and replicated is the right way to go. The rest will stay, guys. We will still have big mainframes. We still do, by the way, and machines in between and so forth. But that will become more and more in the legacy camp, and scale-out computing will be more the default. That's our main thesis and motivation behind this stuff. We do believe public clouds have become more mature. I can tell you ours have become quite a bit more mature in the last few years, in short history, if you will. And we and others will turn the crank on this thing. So you're going to have more and more mature public clouds out there. But this notion of having to run stuff on premises will not go away. You have to run them in a very flexible manner through your own configuration of Windows Server and System Center or whatever. Or you want to do it through a public cloud like Windows Azure Appliance or something else. So the need to run stuff locally or under your control in some capacity will remain, which leads to the question of, how do you connect them and so forth. I also believe we're going to see more specialized clouds and cloud providers, if you will. There are local needs in local countries and local segments that can only be met by somebody who knows that space. And the overriding thing you'll see is that security and management across these boundaries will become the norm. And that's new to all of us. As I mentioned, don't assume it's a big firewall that will protect you from everything. It doesn't. It never actually really worked that way. And now you'll be more and more crossing boundaries all over the place. Okay, guys, I'm basically done. Just want to leave you one more thought. Cloud computing is very early. I know it's in fashion now. I know it's in vogue. To be honest, when we started Windows Azure, we started it as a platform for the web. The word cloud wasn't yet in fashion. And we realized, this is really what cloud computing should be. So the principles have always been there, but now they're being put together into practice, if you will. But it's early. The application model is being developed, if you will, the best practices, how to do this thing. All the tooling for connectivity and management is being developed as well. People's understanding of how do I manage stuff across all these boundaries is new and we're evolving, if you will. And the last thought I want to leave you with is, one size does not fit all here. Don't believe somebody tells you, you must move to the cloud tomorrow, everything and the like. Having said that, the stuff is really happening. So think of all the issues I mentioned today. Now, I have almost 12 minutes for Q&A. And I've been talking quickly, so please ask me questions. Question here, please.
Yeah, taking a quick spin through the Patterns and Practices book last night about cloud, I didn't see a lot about OpenID. One of the things that makes OpenID kind of interesting is that it gives us a chance to avoid some of the location-specific issues. Like in the European Union, we can't really track someone's email address, in the US we can. Do you see you guys offering guidance along that line? Or is this going to be kind of like, incorporating in Delaware? Everyone stores their data.
No,
I understand. So they're so loose.
No, short answer is yes.
We don't have a mic'd up.
I'm going to repeat the question. So the basic question is about OpenID, and are we going to document more of how in our practices, how to use the OpenID, and so forth, what technology we have for OpenID. And for a number of reasons, OpenID is attractive. By all means, go for it. So we can, our stack for access control, you'll see us more and more investing in using any available ID system, including OpenID by name. And the base platform, as I told you, doesn't even know anything about IDs, to be honest. But the question is, what federation solution are you using? And access control in general, in particular, will be investing more in OpenID as well. So short answer is go for it.
Cool.
You will need, I believe, to federate from different places. And as I mentioned, the whole theme you've seen me say, there are different geographical and geo reasons, geopolitical reasons. Otherwise, you have to use different technologies. Go for them. The platform is agnostic. But we owe you better documentation, though, which is the point you mentioned. Question, as I saw there from somewhere. Question? Anybody? Yeah?
If not, I got a bunch.
Oh, please.
Another one is the data storage expectations in the U.S. differ greatly from Europe, and Europe is still very much in flux. Do you have any sense as to whether those are issues you'd be providing guidance on as well? Or is that the kind of thing that is in your best interest because of lawyers to...
No, I'll be honest with you. The question is about storage and rules in Europe versus the U.S., and the rules in Europe are not yet clear and so forth.
Right.
What we do today is a couple of things. As I mentioned, you decide where your storage lives. That's important. So the control is with you. And we'll give you some other control in a second. But the basic point, you decide that for this storage account, and you have the ID and the credentials for it, it must live in Europe. Okay? And specifically in this data center or that data center. Okay? What we also guarantee is that if we do geo-replication of that data, it will remain in the same geo area. So if you put stuff in one part of Europe, we will replicate only within Europe. Same within the U.S., by the way. We will replicate only within the U.S. and in Southeast Asia. So we guarantee that part. Now, how strong is the SLA? Can a packet by mistake be routed through a country you don't like? It gets really hairy the more you go down the stack. And some question we got from customers about that. Okay. So there's a level below which it's like, I can't tell you where the fiber really going. But having said that, we give you enough guarantees of where you place your data or where we replicate your data. So at least keep it within certain boundaries. If you want your data in, just to mention a name, Lithuania or some country, I don't have a data center, I'm sorry, I don't have a solution for you. I'll sell you the appliance when it's available, and you can build your own cloud there. Yes?
Can I run another HTTP server instead of IIS?
The question is, can you run a different HTTP server instead of IIS? By all means, yes. The way you do it, technically, you use the worker role. We have something called the web role, which is really an IIS. The worker role is basically, you can run anything you want to. And we have customers using Apache, using JBoss, Tomcat, you name it. So the answer is yes. Question? Yes?
Question on limitations on SQL Azure in the cloud.
Yes. The question about limitation of SQL Azure in the cloud.
Storage,
yes, yeah. So SQL Azure today, as I mentioned, it gives you basically SQL semantics in the cloud as a service. And it's virtually SQL, 99 point something, big number. Same APIs and the like. Has a limitation at the moment of how big a database can be. It's 50 gigabytes at the moment, okay, each table, each database, basically. And that's bigger than it used to be before. It used to be 10 and 1 and so forth. We're working on making the number bigger, of course. Ultimately, you'll get bigger. I'm pretty sure we're going to get bigger sizes. But ultimately, you have to ask yourself hard questions of how scalable your service should be, your application should be, and how much you want to do your own data partitioning and sharding. Versus assuming that the platform will just scale for you infinitely, if you will. So there are points in the spectrum where, I grant you, 50 gigabytes hopefully will go up in number. But there's a point in the spectrum where you really have to ask yourself, how scalable will my application ever become? And what's the best way for me to do my data management? So you may have your own layer before storage to do different ways of partitioning your data by customers, et cetera, and sharding in different ways and so forth. So it's a deeper discussion. So you'll see us increasing the limits the platform can handle, but at the same time, there is work to be done at the application level for it to truly scale at the very large scale. And it depends. If you want to do a separate website versus running something at the scale of Bing, you know, there's a whole spectrum there. Yes?
I have some questions related to multi-tenancy.
Okay.
Okay, so how is this platform suitable for creating, you know, like... long-tail multi-tenant applications, like I want to write my own Hotmail, or let's say I want to create a business application, in which case I'm guessing I would go for a separate database for each customer, you know, a CRM system or something like that. Are there tools for automating the creation and setup of SQL instances?
Good question. The question about multi-tenancy in general, and specifically how would be the best way to say, you know, configure databases, and how would you do? Design a database per customer? Do you share a bunch of customers in one database and the like, and are there tools in that space? To my knowledge, we don't have tools in that space. However, I know it's an important area, and trust me, it's a question we get quite a bit, especially after you end up with, okay, fine, I'll do the cloud, I'll use the cloud. Where should I do it, if you will? At the minimum, I think we have an old paper in MSDN about, you know, how to partition data. We have some stuff I can probably point you to.
Yeah, I know it.
You know that one?
Yeah, exactly.
We need at the minimum to update that document with this platform in mind. But better yet, I know we need to invest more in patterns and maybe even code samples for this one. I should probably work with some other people on this particular one. It's a common question we get. Short answer, I don't have data. I don't have applications for that, tools for that.
Unless I'm mistaken, Salesforce is running multi-tenancy in one huge database to some extent. I guess it's a very specialized database.
No, I can't speak for them, but keep going.
Yeah, but here, if I want to do it in SQL Server, do you have recommendations there for, let's say, a business solution, running that in one database, with a tenant ID on all the records, or splitting it into multiple?
Yeah. More questions on what's the best way to, do we have any recommendations to what's the best way to, for a given application type, especially multi-tenant applications, to store their state in databases. It's a deeper discussion, to be honest. We should have some of it offline. I do believe, though, that we need to at least write a book or something on this subject, because it's something I think many of us are facing when you go on to write this application for a platform like this. Because multi-tenancy, by the way, is one of the reasons why people want to go to the cloud.
Exactly.
They want to have a shared service shared by many people. Once you divide the basic architecture, you find out, what do I do with my data? I understand. It's a weakness we have, I think, at least in our documentation, let's put it this way. So we owe you an answer, to be honest. Yes?
Can you please tell me how Azure competes today with Amazon EC2 and how you see yourself differentiating?
Sure. Question about how do we see ourselves differentiating from Amazon EC2 and how we compete. Showed you an earlier slide of the industry terms of infrastructure as a service and platform as a service. Using the sort of the simplistic terms, Amazon is much more in the infrastructure as a service space than us, and we are more in the platform as a service space. But this is simplistic terms. I mean, what it really means in practice is our main value prop revolves around a couple of points. One is we want to make it very easy to write applications that really are cloud applications. So we have a rich set of APIs all the way from the automation level, which is part of the platform, no extra costs and the like, all the way to the rich services I'm showing you, or the connectivity solutions and so forth. And you see us investing far more in this space. Application tools, Visual Studio plugins, Eclipse tooling, languages. So you're going to see us investing quite a bit in API levels to give you a platform versus, frankly, a bunch of plumbing. So that's one dimension. The other dimension is a key differentiator from us, from Amazon, frankly, everybody else in the industry. We will provide the complete spectrum from on-premises to the cloud, starting with Windows Server, Windows Azure on-premises, and Windows Azure in the public cloud. And the public cloud, anybody can go take Windows Azure appliance and be a public cloud provider as well. So we will build a complete ecosystem out there. Unlike Amazon, I am not telling you, you must move to the public cloud and that's it. I think this doesn't make sense to me, okay? There's going to be this complete spectrum. But we're investing heavily in both sides of the house. Having said that, they started 2 years earlier than us. Okay, so they have a certain amount of momentum, which is admirable, and we're learning from each other. And if you notice, they've been reacting to us as well. If you pay careful attention, they've been doing some stuff because what we have been doing and so forth. So it's a healthy competition. But the differentiator, as I mentioned, is that we're going to have the complete spectrum, and we're going to have a platform. We do have a platform beyond just the basic plumbing in there. That's sort of the answer. Yes. Question is about what are the scenarios for private cloud and how it look like, more or less. What we have announced and what we're planning to do is that you'll be able to buy what we'll be calling a Windows Azure appliance. Basically, it's a combined hardware-software solution that is basically Windows Azure software. So your application written for Windows Azure in the public cloud can be deployed to that system as well. The idea is that to get effectively a complete solution. So we're not going to go and ask you go buy this wire and this machine and the like and hope automation works. We'll make sure that we work with the OEMs, that the whole bundle really works. Remember, automation is a big part of this platform. Another key point is that it's actually Windows Azure. So, we're not going to hold any secret bits and put in our public cloud and not give it to you. Okay. Having said that, scale is important, guys. So if you just want to run a couple of roles in a corner somewhere, And you have to have it within your premises. Do it yourself, guys. Okay. If you want to do a very custom systems or a very flexible system that the Windows Azure architecture does not meet, please use Windows Server. Build your own SAN behind it, etc. So there are scenarios where you want to have enough scale on premises because you want to be a service provider, or you're a big customer, and you want to retain control over some stuff within your premises for which the appliance is geared. Otherwise, please go to the public cloud. And collectively, we and the market will figure out exactly where the boundaries are, sizes and the like. Question?
What would the price of the appliance be like?
We haven't announced anything about that front yet, so please stay tuned. Because I have maybe time for one more question, and we're done. Okay? Go ahead.
Is there a timeline for SSIS?
SIS being? Stay tuned. I'm not going to pre-announce anything today. Okay, guys. Thank you very much. I'll be available for the next 10 minutes, 15 minutes if you need to catch me offline. Thanks.